Hi, and welcome to another episode of Lead Like You Give a Damn, where I speak with leaders and leadership experts who have cracked the code on leading with authenticity, purpose, and effectiveness. Before we start, let me ask if you've seen our one-page strategic growth plan to go from chaos and heroics to repeatable, scalable growth. Go to davemckeown.com/plan to access this super simple four-step system to achieve your strategic growth goals with ease without sacrificing profit, quality, or employee morale. Now on with today's show. I'm your host, Dave McKeown, and my guest today is Patrick Ledden. Patrick benefits from hands-on leadership and management experience, coupled with academic rigor and expertise. He served in the military, worked as a consultant, built and sold his own company, and now helps others to become more effective leaders. Listen as we talk about the need for different styles of leadership in different settings, how to evolve as a leader, and some of the innovative work that he's doing at Vanderbilt University. As always, make sure you're subscribed to get notified of each episode as it comes out. Let me know if you have any questions or comments, and as always, enjoy the show. Well, hey, Patrick, thank you so much for being here with me today. How are you?
I'm great, Dave. How about yourself?
I am just great. Looking forward to doing the return leg where you get to be in the hot seat and I get to ask the questions.
I know. I don't know how I'm a little more comfortable asking all the questions, not necessarily answering them, but we'll see how I can do.
Yeah, I think you'll do great. Patrick, the first thing that strikes me as I'm, you know, prepping for our discussion today is just quite the very background that you have. You know, you've spent time in the US Army, you've started a number of different companies and training companies, and you're a professor at Vanderbilt teaching leadership and management. What is it about your varied background? Like, to tell me through that journey, what's brought you to those various different avenues of your life?
Well, I think that when I look at it, of course, in retrospect, I can pull this perfect thread through and say, look at how this career perfectly built upon itself, like many of us can do in retrospect. But the reality is, you know, the career that unfolds before us often is about decisions we make in a moment, decide which direction we want to go. And mine's certainly no different than that. I think the common thread in my career is probably the common thread in nearly every organization. It's working with and through people. It's been a passion of mine. So my time in the military, I had a chance to have leadership roles and like platoon leader and company commander. And then I worked at KPMG Consulting. I was a project leader. And then I worked for my own business for about 11 years. And now I'm in the classroom kind of leading students as well as going out and doing some work with clients. And all of that really is about, you know, helping people be better versions of themselves. And I mentioned on the front end of something about being altruistic, and it sounds so altruistic to say, well, I can help people be better versions of themselves. Isn't that a better way, great way to live your life? Which it is, but it's not always been altruistic. I've just figured out over time that if I want to get something done that I think really matters, instead of trying to put the screws on people or make it really difficult for people, just help them unleash what talent they already have and they can go where they want to go. And guess what? We all win in the process. So I've just kind of learned that to be successful, it's about bringing the best out of other people, not kind of getting in their way.
And through all of those different areas that you've been involved in, what are some of the common threads of leadership for you? And what are potentially, if any, some of the differences in how you need to show up as a leader?
Well, I think some of the common threads are basic ideas about, for example, getting your mind on straight. Everything we do, I would argue, our behaviors are a product of how we see things. And then what we do is often drives the results we get. So if you don't like the results, you know, step back and look at your behaviors. And if you don't like the behaviors, think about what's going on between your ears that's driving you to do certain things. So I think that's a very common thing when it comes to being a more effective leader, is just kind of taking some time to look in the mirror and think about what you really care about, what really drives you, and how you can bring that best to work. And then I think another common thing is really, especially in today's world, we hear about it more and more, the idea of getting clear on your purpose or how do you find meaning in your work. I think that transcends all industries too. I really think when you get down to the things that might be a little bit unique or different, in my mind, many of those things fall more on the management side of the house than necessarily on the leadership side of the house.
Right.
When I think about something that, you know, might be different if I work in an engineering firm compared to if I worked in retail, compared to if I teach at a university, that tends to be more management skills. And by that, I mean, we manage things. Mm-hmm. As opposed to if I'm doing anything with people, regardless of my industry, well, we lead people. So those are very similar things. And I think regardless of your industry and maybe your experience yourself, all of us want some of the same basic things to be fulfilled. Like, we want to find meaning in our work. We want to feel like we're being heard. We want to be able to bring our best ideas to the table. We want to feel at the end of the week when we drive home, we actually got something done of value. So all of those type of things to me transcend industry. It's just the more the blocking and tackling, how you do those things that kind of plays out differently in different worlds. In areas of like speed, how quickly something needs to get done, how much ambiguity or familiarity you have in your work. You know, those things tend to be more industry or job type specific.
And how has your own particular leadership skill set, philosophy, mindset, behavior set changed or evolved as you've, you know, meandered? Well, you probably didn't meander, but as you've gone through that career change, have you noticed any sizable shifts in how you approach leadership?
Yeah, I think through the School of Hard Knocks, it's one of those things like you learn it through the School of Hard Knocks, even though you read about it in the book type of thing. Part of it is really comes down to how I see my role as a leader. I think especially early on when I had my first like leadership role, you felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders and that my job was, you know, to be there earlier than everyone else and leave later than everyone else and work harder than everyone else and take all of their problems off their shoulders and put them on my shoulders and move every obstacle out of the way and on and on and on. And there certainly is a time for those things to happen. No doubt about that. So I'm not saying like, listen to what he said about leadership. Patrick thinks you leave early, you come in late and you don't do any work. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that if you carry everything on your shoulders all the time, guess what? Next year, you're going to carry everything on your shoulders plus some more. And 2 years later, you're going to do it even worse. And it just keeps going. And in the process, no one around you is going to really grow. So what I've learned, and I was very fortunate, I spent a number of years working with a company called the Franklin Covey Company. And I had a chance to work directly some with Stephen Covey and learn from him. And one thing he talks about is that leadership is more about release than control. And I think that's so true. Probably earlier on in my career, Dave, I was more of a control freak than I am now. Now I'm more about an outcome freak, maybe. Like I want to get these things done and I want to help other people achieve in the process. But how we go about doing everything, I don't need to have my hands wrapped around every bit of it.
A really interesting journey, because as you're talking about it, like, and quite a lot of leaders who have made that transition, it sounds like that journey is just part of an overarching maturing of the person. You know, as you get older, you get more experience and you begin to learn those lessons. Yet I still see leaders that are even in their twilight of their career that are still holding on to too much, that are still trying to control too much, that haven't made that leap or that jump or that connection. And I'm curious to know from your perspective, what is it about the leaders that make those transitions? What do they have? Or maybe to flip it on the other side, those leaders that are mature in their career but are still stuck, what is it that's getting in their way?
I think that they have a degree of discernment when it comes to the level of involvement you need to take in any particular task or any particular situation or any particular relationship. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's necessarily, you know, you're not successful if you're totally laissez-faire and let everything just kind of happen or unfold, nor are you necessarily successful if you're very controlling, right? Mm-hmm. You're more successful over time if you can figure out, you know, where do you need to be at any given moment and engage accordingly. So there may be some situations where you look at the task that needs to be done. You look at the competence of the team members. You look at the risk if it doesn't go well. And you say, I better be smack dab in the middle of this thing right now. Mm-hmm. And there's other things where you might say, you know what, the risk is low. If it doesn't go well, you know, no hard knock, we learn from it. Or, you know what, these people's competence is off the scale. They can deliver on it better than I would just get in the way. You know, so trying to figure out where you need to be. And Dave, you mentioned the military. I remember many years ago when I went through a school in the Army called U.S. Army Ranger School. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty intense leadership development course in the military. And I remember one part, they were talking to us about going through the woods infantry formation. So you imagine there's like 38 soldiers, 39 with the platoon leader in your platoon. And they're drawing on this board everywhere that everyone needs to be. So they would say the point person needs to be out front and their job is to look for danger areas or look for the enemy. And if they see anything wrong, they stop and warn everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this person needs to be over here and the platoon sergeant needs to be in the back. And they kind of laid out on this chart where everybody needs to be. And then somebody asked a brilliant question. They said, where does the platoon leader need to be? That's the one we're training to be. At least I was training to be. And the answer that the ranger instructor gave back is the platoon leader needs to be wherever the platoon leader needs to be based upon where the platoon needs the platoon leader to be. And I thought, that's brilliant. I don't know if I thought at the time that's brilliant. I probably wrote it down like, what the heck is he talking about? But I get it, right? If there's a problem in the front of the formation that there is a river that you have to cross and figure out what you're going to do, then the platoon leader better go forward and help address that. If you're moving along through clear, safe terrain, the platoon leader doesn't need to be up front. The point being is your people need you to be where you need to be. And the only way, in my way at least, I figured that out was reps, was just more and more data points, seeing things and going, okay, when I come up forward, it helps people. When I step back, it doesn't. Or when I step back, it helps people. So trying to figure that out. And so much of that goes back to building rapport with your people and trust with your people. And just ultimately saying, you know, if I'm a leader, it's a people game. Right. I better realize I'm in the people business.
Yeah. And just that ability to flex. And it's so much of it is context driven. And I think that for those leaders that I see that are not making the next step or the next transition, it's just because they've just got one mode. So it's, well, I've got to lead from out front, or, well, the best leaders lead from behind. And it is that notion of, hey, you've got tools in your toolkit based on the context. Get used to what it feels like to be in those contexts and to use those tools and to see the results that you get.
Dave, if I get on the dance floor, I got one move, it is not pretty. If I'm on a basketball court, I'm always going to the right side of the hoop, and it's not pretty. You know exactly what I'm going to do. We can't have that if we're leading. You got to have, like you said, a bunch of things in your toolkit and figure out what's needed right now, not for you, but for them.
Mm. So you're teaching this pretty innovative course at Vanderbilt at the minute, Leading Through Crisis. What is it about crisis that draws you to it? And what are you doing in that course?
Well, I hate to say it, you know, it sounds cliche, but you know, life is a series sometimes of crisis. Right. You turn the chapter from one chapter to another, and sure enough, there's something else facing you. I was actually in New York City last week because we were on spring break. So I was working for a client in New York, and everybody was excited to be there. There were about 40 people at this event, masks off, you know, no vaccine cards required. Close proximity to each other as we went through the event. And I talked to them about change. Our lives are often marked with these turning of the page moments. Mm-hmm. We go from one chapter to the next. And sometimes we like long for the chapter that was in the past. Like you look back over your shoulder and go, I wish I was back in school, or I wish I was still single, or whatever people might think, right? And other times you turn the page and you look to the next chapter with complete excitement. You don't even look forward. You don't even look behind you to see what the last chapter was. You're just looking forward. And I think COVID's a moment, you know, it's a crisis. Certainly it's impacted many of us, all of us, I would dare say, around the world over the last 2 years. And maybe we don't want to look over our shoulder. I don't want to think about masks anymore. I don't want to think about 6-foot separations. I don't want to think about any of that stuff. But the reality is there's some things we can take forward from that as well. So part of it to me is the realization when it comes to this course is that life is a series of crises and adversity. And if leadership ultimately comes down to two things, which is influence and decision-making, the question becomes, through crisis and adversity, how do you influence others? How do you make better decisions? And I think the leaders who can figure that out, whether it's a small crisis that we've done to ourselves or a big global crisis, life gives us plenty of reps. So the course you mentioned, it's a very unique course. I co-teach it with a member of our board of trust, a gentleman named Michael. And Michael was the CEO at one point of Sotheby's Auction House. And did that for about 6 years. And he and I are the co-facilitators for it. And we have lots of different CEOs. So we have CEOs from a number of companies. Some people would know, some people wouldn't necessarily know as well, but like American Airlines CEO or a company called Lumen Energy, their CEO, a number of different CEOs. And then we also have some really people that might surprise you, but who have really revolutionized or changed an industry. So one person, for example, is the author James Patterson. Which if you saunter into a bookstore, go on Amazon for a few moments, you'll find a James Patterson book.
Right.
But he has sold, you know, 700 and plus million book copies over the years, which is just unbelievable.
Right.
And he's revolutionized an industry, you know, in an industry that historically authors put out one book a year. He's putting out 30, 40 books a year. Historically, in an industry where people write in one genre, he's writing in multiple genres. In an industry where people kind of shy away from a lot of co-authors, he's got 40 co-authors type of thing. And he just had a book come out in the last couple of weeks that he did with Dolly Parton, the artist. So, and she made an album that goes with the book. He talked a lot about just disrupting everything.
Right.
And I thought it was really interesting. So the idea is we take a group of less than 30 students with this very intimate kind of conversation with leaders. It's a pretty neat experience. Yesterday, we had John Ingram, who's part of the Ingram family. He runs Ingram Content Group, which is a books distribution and print-on-demand company, but he's also the founder of the Nashville Soccer Club. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's interesting discussion from his perspective about entering into the print-on-demand industry and what he learned. So it's a lot of that type of intimate discussion with leaders.
And is that just, do they come and share their story? Is it Q&A or is it a little bit of a mix of both? Like, how do they disseminate their knowledge?
So we write a case pretty much every one of them. We interview them and write a case study. My teaching assistant's been very helpful on that. We write a case, the students read the case, answer all the questions, submit that as their homework assignment, plus any other supplementary information we might give them, like articles and videos to watch. And then we come in, and it's just like you see in television, you know, when the professor steps up, in this case, it's me, every time I step up and I say, all right, Dave, this week we did the case on this, talk us through it. And I just cold call people. And then we start a conversation. And then eventually my job, honestly, Dave, is to go from leading a facilitation about a case with the expert in the room who was involved in that case to having the case fade into the background and have the conversation be more Q&A driven. That's kind of how it works. And we got into a really nice groove. Fortunately for me, good, better, and different. I'm pretty good at like asking questions on my feet.
Right.
So it's worked out very nicely, but these students do such a great job. So that's how we typically run it. It's very case study driven.
Right.
Usually, honestly, dealing with a moment in time of this CEO, and it's not usually the most recent moment. It's some moment when they were 25, 35, 45, and some pivotal thing happened.
Mm.
And they either, they always learn a lot in the process, but they maybe they really messed it up in the process too. And that's oftentimes where you have your biggest learning. And I've been very fortunate that the CEOs and leaders who come and talk to us have been very forthcoming about some of the challenges that we had. One of the CEOs we had was the former CEO of like Harrah's Casino. And he kind of talked about a situation where he chose to extend a loan to someone who had lost millions on the floor that day.
Hmm.
Maybe give the guy a chance to win his money back. And sure enough, the guy won his money back. He took him for $8 million that night. And it was like the day before closing a quarter for a publicly traded company type of thing. So those type of discussions are pretty interesting.
Right. What have you learned about crisis throughout that course? How have your thoughts shifted or changed?
I've learned so much. It's funny. Every week for the last several years, I've put out this weekly leadership newsletter. I write up on LinkedIn about different things every week. And I look back at them now, and the last several of them were directly informed by something someone said in class, which of course I give them full credit. But there was one like the other day, just a quote that someone said, it was the idea of, if you're going to revolutionize or change an industry, and this person worked in the alternative energy space, he said, you have to figure out how do you go from breakthrough idea to boring as quickly as possible. And I write that down, breakthrough to boring. And what he was talking about there was the idea that you can have some great revolutionary idea, but nobody's willing to adopt it.
Mm.
It's not going to happen. So how do you take something that seems almost crazy at face value and make it to where people accept it? So then I kind of help people think that through. Where have they done it in their lives, or where is an idea on their team not managed to get started because everybody's saying, that won't work around here. How do you change it, turn it on a dime? So, okay, how do we make it boring so it does work around here type of thing? So there's a lot of those type of insights. A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed, or one of our guests was the CEO of Vanderbilt's medical center. So here at the campus where I'm at, and it's a big job. He has 20,000 employees at Vanderbilt's medical center. And he was talking about COVID, and someone asked him about telemedicine. One of the students asked him about telemedicine. And he said, it's interesting. When COVID hit, telemedicine was part of our 5-year strategic plan. Was to get this telemedicine. It was a big initiative.
Mm.
He said it went from a 5-year initiative to a 3-week project because it went from nice to have in the future, seems like a big thing, to we have to do it in order to survive. And he said what's happened in retrospect is not only did they get it done in 3 weeks as opposed to 5 years, they have a pretty elegant solution that actually works really well.
Mm.
They have 20,000 appointments a day that are delivered via telehealth every day. And their patient satisfaction scores are higher than they've ever been before. And he said, what's interesting is, as doctors, we had everybody bamboozled, like you had to come into the office in order to get this medical treatment or this consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, go figure, when you don't feel well, you don't want to fight traffic and parking. You'd rather stay home and do it in your slippers.
Mm-hmm.
So, that would be an example of something like I pick up on that and I say, okay, what do we learn from that? How do we go forward and get better? And that's been, to me, one of the main reasons I like to work at a university is it's just a laboratory for ideas and a lot of energy, which is fun.
Yeah, and actually you bring on to where I was thinking in my head, which is, obviously what you're discussing here is a really great way to bring some industry expertise and experience to your students and help them understand the real world. How does it go the other way? What role does academia have in influencing industry when it comes to leadership?
Well, I think that I could tackle that a couple of different ways. One is certainly academia does executive education type of things, and companies come to the universities to receive some training and development. I also think that there's some really good research that happens in academia that oftentimes doesn't see the light of day.
Mm.
Some of it probably at face value say, oh, was that study worth the effort? Because we all knew that going in type of thing.
Oh, right.
There's always that thing, did I know a set of P could run on a treadmill or whatever it might be. But I think that one thing that academia does is they do produce some pretty good insights that would be helpful to people. Where they struggle is getting the message out.
Right.
Because they tend to talk, if the typical listener to most leadership podcasts were to pick up a peer-reviewed journal article, they would feel like they're looking at, and I don't mean typical in a negative way, but I look at it sometimes too. I look at it and say, you know, this doesn't even make any sense. And what, you know, what is p-value? What is r-squared? What are all these type of statistical things? The ability to put it out there in ways that are easily digestible is oftentimes missed. I mean, there's things like Harvard Business Review that do a decent job at doing that, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I think there's more opportunity to do that, because it's almost like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, did it fall? Well, if a great study was done and a wonderful insight was gained, but nobody ever found out about it, did it even happen?
Right. Yeah. It's almost like you've got the raw studies as they are. And to your point, that's just tough for most people to pick up and kind of read through. And you've got things like Harvard Business Review. And then you've got folks like Brené Brown, Adam Grant, who have sort of taken mm-hmm. some of that research and then gone, hey, let's popularize it. And it sort of feels like there's a bit in the middle there that could exploit getting some more of that research into industry to help influence without it having to be like the biggest celebrity speaker that there is there, you know?
Yeah. It does tell me though, like with people like Adam and Brené, it's definitely that there's appetite out there for it, right? There's a desire for it. I remember hearing Brené speak. She came to Vanderbilt and spoke a while back, and it electrified the audience to basically mm-hmm. just hear something she had to say mm-hmm. when it came to being vulnerable and kind of making it okay and showing why it's okay and all those type of things. It creates a bit of a, you know, a cult following around mm-hmm. what she's doing. But I just also think that that following exists because there's that itch that needs to be scratched. I do think that the watch out with all of it, not specifically talking about either one of those two people, just in general, is when it comes to university research, oftentimes is done with convenience samples. Mm-hmm. You know, and convenience samples basically means we survey people who are around. And that typically means we're surveying 18 to 22-year-old undergraduates, right. Which can be informative, no doubt about that. My students have some amazing things to say. I don't mean to discount that.
Right.
But not necessarily the most applicable thing when you say, okay, research told us this. Therefore, if you're 45 years old facing the same situation, it's going to hold true here.
Right.
Humans have an amazing ability to surprise us. And the human experience is different at 18 than it is at 45.
Right.
When you have other expectations. So I think that we have to always take research with a grain of salt and say, okay, you know, ask smart questions. Mm-hmm. Who was involved in the study? How applicable are these outcomes to a general population? All of those type of things that you may have heard about once in time in school, but hadn't really thought about, it needs to be helpful as well. On the other hand, we shouldn't discount everything immediately go, well, that was done with students, therefore it's not applicable here. Well, that may or may not be true. I think it's the ability to expose yourself to these ideas and think about them. And ultimately, for all of us, it's about awareness and choice. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of something, and then I choose what I want to do with the information.
So Patrick, where can folks go to learn more about you and the wonderful work that you do?
Oh, the wonderful work that I do. If they go to ledingroup.com, it's LEDDINGROUP.com. They can check out the podcast there with guests like Dave. And as well as we have a weekly newsletter every week, I put out I don't know why I put myself in this grind, Dave, but it works great. Every week I put out a new article, a new video, and a new tool. Hmm. And the tools are designed to be, sometimes they're infographics, just kind of the 5 points or whatever. Other times they're forms. And it'll be like filling this form out. And I, over the course of the last few years, I've got hundreds of these things that we put out for free every week. So
that's fantastic. Yep. We will link to all of those in the show notes. Patrick, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your thoughts, your perspective, and your wisdom. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much. And if anybody has any questions, just reach out to me. I'm happy to talk.
Thanks for listening to Lead Like You Give a Damn. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about me, the show, or the work that I do, you can go to davemckeown.com, and I'll see you next time.